So we were dealing with this mantra, fifth mantra. Tad ejadi, tan na ejadi, tad u dure, tad u antike, tad andarasya sarvasya, tad u sarvasya asya bahyadaha. We have not completed this verse. We must continue today. But one important point to be remembered. The sixth and seventh mantras should be read together. The sixth one, yastu sarvani bhutani atmani eva anupashyadi sarva bhudastu cha atmanam tato navijigupsade. This loka gives the ethical and the psychological dimension of a man of wisdom who has realized his identity with the entire creation and who is living in a perpetual consciousness, awareness of the oneness of existence or unity of existence. We have already dealt with it, so I won't go to that. Then seventh one, yasmin sarvani bhutani atmaiva abhud vijanataha tatrakko mohakka shoka ekattu manupasyataha. So one who has realized this unity, the man of wisdom, he transcends all problems, griefs and sorrows because he realizes ekatva means unity or oneness. In Vedanta, a very important point which is often repeated again and again is all problems are due to seeing oneself as different from other. That is the means dvaidadhi bhayam bhavati. Bhaya means fear. Fear, it should be taken to mean all problems related to the empirical life. Sense of shame, sense of fear, sense of hatred, sense of alienation, and all the problems like depression or any or anxiety, grief, all these problems are rooted in seeing ourselves as different from others. If we can see ourselves as one with the entire creation, then there will be no hatred and no anxiety and no grief. So that point is made clear. Now, fifth, eighth slokas, fifth and eighth sloka should be read together. You will get a clear understanding of the ideal of this unity, the ideal of this spiritual wisdom or realization. Before going further, I should explain a few fundamental points of Indian philosophical tradition. I already explained the beginning, the first class. But I shall just repeat and a few more ideas will be elaborated. You know, in Indian philosophical tradition, we have 12 distinct schools of thought. These 12 systems of thought are divided into theistic and atheistic streams, Astika and Nastika philosophy. Now, theistic systems imply that their exponents believe in the authenticity of Vedas, not that they believe in the existence of God. This is a very important, a special characteristic of Indian philosophical tradition. You may not believe in God, but if you believe in the Vedas, which means if you believe that this world is not all that exists, there is something beyond this world. If you are not a cutthroat empiricist or a utilitarian, or you are a theist, you may not believe in a God who creates this world. In fact, creationism, as understood in modern Western philosophical stream, is something different. That is based on mostly biblical concept of creation. May explain the Genesis. In the beginning, there was world was God, etc. And God created man in his own image and breathed his soul in the nostrils of man. Now, this is the basis of modern concept of creationism, based on Christian theological tradition. Now, that's not what is meant by creationism in Indian philosophical tradition. I shall come to that because as we go deeper and deeper into the Upanishad philosophy, these ideas are very important. And only we get a clear picture of what the Upanishad really implies by saying that there is something beyond the present, something beyond the empirical, something which transcends the present, something which remains all the time without any change, and something which is real with the capital letter R, which is omniscient, omnipresent, immanent, and transcendent. These four characteristics. The reality which is omnipresent, omniscient, immanent, and transcendent. Then only we will end. I shall explain a few such points. Many of you, at least some of you, may be familiar with a very well-known slogan, Purusha Suktam. It comes in the Rig Veda Samhita, 10th Mandala. Sahasrasesha Purushaha, Sahasraksha Sahasrapad, Subhumim Vishyato Vrutva Atyadishtha Deshankulam. This is the beginning of that sukta, which is called Purusha Sukta. Purusha means, see the word Purusha. Very often, many of you may be familiar with this term. It has got a deep philosophical implication. Purusha means the absolute reality which is a resident of this body, which is residing within this body, but which is different from the body, and which is not perishable as the body within which it resides. Puri sete iti purushaha. This is the definition given by Shankaracharya. Puri actually means city, but it means this body mind complex is what is meant by Puri. No, the word Purusha itself implies that the reality is immanent. It is not the same thing. If you suppose somebody tells you are sitting in a room, it is obvious that you are not the same thing as the room. If you are the same thing as the room, you won't be sitting inside the room. So Puri is this body-mind complex. And this Purusha is the reality sitting within, residing within. And which is not perishable as the body is. That is Purusha. Now, the ancient Vedic Rishi says Sahasrasirsha Purusha. Meaning is, this Purusha is Sahasrasirsha. Sahasra means 1,000 in Sanskrit language. But the great commentator of Vedas called Sahayanacharya is Sahasram Asankhyam iti abhidhiyade. It's a quotation from Sahayana's commentary on Rig Veda Samhita. Means Sahasra means infinite in number. That which we cannot count. And this reality is endowed with infinite number of eyes. Which means it is all-knowing, all-seeing, omniscient. And it is Purushaga, means the inner reality. Sahasrakshaga. Sorry, very little turning. Sahasraksha means 1,000 eyes. The reality endowed with 1,000 eyes. Aksha means eyes. Sahasra Sisha means head. The reality is Sahasra Sisha. It is endowed with Sahasra means 1,000 heads, which means infinite number of heads. It is all-pervading, it is all-pervasive. It is omnipresent. Sahasraksha means the reality which is endowed with 1,000 eyes. Here also 1,000 means in Sanskrit, asankhyam, it means infinite in number. You cannot count. It is all-seeing, all-knowing or all-seeing. Sahasrapad means it has 1,000 legs. You cannot say sometimes your Hindu god is 1,000 heads, but only 1,000 eyes. How can it be? It should be 2,000 eyes. And then 1,000 legs also. That is also, I think mathematicians won't agree. The idea is, it is infinite. It is all-pervasive, omnipresent, all-pervading. So, Sahasrasesha, Sahasraksha, Sahasrapa. Then, Sabhumim Vishyato Vrutva Atyadishtad Deshangulam. Bhumi means earth. Vishwada means this reality, Vrtva means Avrtva. It is it encompassing. It covers this earth, the entire creation from all sides. And now comes the next point. Atyadishtha Deshangulam. See, there again, it transcends this created world. With Deshangula means, Angula means a small unit, maybe part of one of our fingers. So small quantity. So it just transcends all that we can think of, all that we can imagine, all that we can pursue. It is transcendent. Deshangula Parimita Desham Atitya Tishthadi. This is this Sanskrit commentary by Sayanacharya. It means, it just goes beyond, let us say 10 centimeters roughly. And it juts out, it projects beyond the empirical phenomena by 10 centimeters, not exactly something like that. Which means, it's a symbolic statement. It transcends. So, the reality, the absolute reality is omniscient. It is omnipresent. It is all-pervading. And not only that, it is immanent. It is immanent, it is all-pervading, but is also in the inner essence of every living being in this world. In the Gita, there is a famous sloka, Ishwaraha sarvabhudanam hrdeshi arjuna tishthadi brahmayan sarvabhudani yantra rudhani maya. In the 18th chapter, Sri Krishna says, Arjuna, God is the inner reality of every being in this world. Residing within every living being, it controls, regulates the entire creation. So God is not somebody who creates this world and then looks at this world and supervises this world, sending with the virtuous people to heaven and the vicious people to hell. No. God is the reality, which is the inner essence of every living being. And this idea is implied in the sixth and seventh mantra. Now here the question arises, as I said, you know, I just mentioned 12 systems of thoughts. The idea of God is, from a philosophical point of view, related to the idea of creation. Is creation real or not? That's the question. As I said, these 12 systems of thought are divided into two main streams, the theistic and atheistic. Among the theistic schools of thought, Nyaya Vaisheshika, Yoga, Sankhya Yoga, and Purvamimamsa, Uttaramimamsa. So let us say, Nyaya and Vaisheshika, Sankhya and Yoga, Purvamimamsa and Uttaramimamsa. Gautama is the teacher of Nyaya philosophy, Kanada is the teacher of Vaisheshika philosophy, Patanjali is the teacher of Yoga philosophy. Remember, Yoga doesn't mean Hatha Yoga. Hatha Yoga, all the postures that are being taught and becoming popular in America today, it is only just one, not insignificant, but just one minute part of Yoga. So, Patanjali is the teacher, and Kapila is the teacher of Sankhya philosophy. Jaimini is the teacher of Mimamsa philosophy, and Vyasa is the teacher, exponent of Vedanta philosophy, later expounded and taught by Shankaracharya. All these six systems are called theistic systems or Astika philosophy, because many of these systems do not clearly define a God, and some of the systems outright deny the existence of God. It is not the way the utilitarians or the Epicureans do that. It says God is not somebody who creates this world and sits outside. There is no need for projecting a God. That's the view of some of these systems of thought. And they are also called theistic systems.
But all of them accept the teachings of the Vedas. Then there are six atheistic systems, Nastika Darshanas. They are the four systems of Buddhist school and Jaina philosophy and the ancient materialists of India, which is called Charvaka philosophy, the ancient materialists of India, the ancient school of materialism. It's called Charvaka philosophy. So the four schools of Buddhist philosophy are Sautrantika, Vaibhashika, which are realistic systems, Vijnanavada and Shunyavada, which are idealistic systems, and then Jaina philosophy and the ancient Indian materialism, which is technically called the Charvaka system. Now, we are coming to the Vedanta system. What Vedantins say about creation. Now, narrowing down to the subject at hand, you have to keep in mind, there are two basic systems of thoughts with regard to creation. One is called Satkaryavada, the other is called Asatkaryavada. I shall explain this. Satkaryavada actually means the theory that that effect is already inherent in cause. That is called Satkaryavada. In other words, to give an example, the banyan tree or a tree is already inherent in the seed from which the tree comes out, sprouts up. You can't, without that seed, there can be no tree. So where did the tree come from? The tree came from the seed only. The seed is a subtle form, and the tree is nothing but the gross manifestation of the seed. So the tree is already inherent in the tree is already inherent in the seed. This is called Satkaryavada. In other words, say, a pot, let us say, there are 100 vessels made of, different types of vessels made of clay, glasses, pots, pans, all that. All these vessels made of clay are inherent in the clay from which they are created. When you infuse name and form, nama and rupa, into clay, you get a glass made of clay or a pot made of clay or another vessel made of clay. Otherwise, they are clay only. Before these vessels were made from clay, they were in the form of clay. And when they are made, they are already existing as pots and pans, then also they are not different from clay. And you break all of them, then also they go back to clay. So practically they are clay only, nothing other than that. Vacharambhanam vikaro namadheyam murtika itteva satyam. In the Chandogya Upanishad, the sixth chapter. We'll come to that later. Where Uddalaka, a great ancient sage, teaches his son and also disciple, Shvetaketu. I won't go into those stories because that will distract from the present topic. What he says is this. When Shvetaketu, his son, returned after graduation in his teacher's college, father asked him the question, did you learn that by knowing which everything comes to be known? Like that, and so on. Then, what is that? Then Uddharaka said, there is vandraya, mrittika itteva satyam. Clay is the only reality. Pots and pans are only different manifestations in the form of name and form. This is the fact. Now, we will come into that. So, here we can understand the pots and pans made of clay, which are effects of clay, are really non-different from clay itself. Clay is the cause, these are the effects. This is the view accepted by Vedantins. This is called Satkaryavada. Asatkaryavadins are different. We are not going to deal with them right now, but I should give an idea. Asatkaryavadins, they are Nayayigas, Vaisheshigas, all these people. They say that everything is a new creation. They will tell you that a pot made of clay is entirely different from the clay from which it is made. It's a new creation. It's called the creationism. There is a famous book on Vedanta, which is a celebrated work, which was written during the post-Shankarite period, Samkshepa Sharirakam, by Sarvajnatma Muni. There he says, Vivartavadasya Purvabhumi Vedantavade Parinamavadaha Vivasthidesmin Parinamavade Soyam Samayati Vivartavada. I shall come to that very important subject related to Vedanta, which we must understand to even enter the Upanishad philosophy, like a password into Upanishad philosophy. Now, so this is called Satkaryavada. It means the view that the effect is already inherent in cause. Effect is not a new creation. It's opposite Asatkaryavada, which tells you that every effect is a new creation. It is it has nothing to do with the cause. Nayayikas, you know, they will tell you. I have to give an idea of this. Nayayikas will say that the threats are in no way related to the cloth which is made from the threads. In reality, the cloth that we are wearing is nothing but the manifestation of formation of the threads or the cotton, which again is turned into threads and which again become cloth. But they would say, no, there is no relationship. So it's called Asatkaryavada. I won't come to those subjects right now in this context. We come to Satkaryavada. In Satkaryavada, again, there are two main schools, and we are very much, our Vedanta philosophy is very much related to this. One school is called Vivartavada, the other is called Parinamavada. Vivartavada is very simple. It's called the theory of transfiguration, the theory of appearance, the theory which says that cause only appears as if it has become effect. And Parinamavada, see, Parinama means transformation. Parinama means transformation. It says the cause has really become effect. That's the main difference. Now, again, Vedanta philosophers will argue that in the beginning we may think that it is a real transformation. Anybody, you ask a child, if you tell a child that a glass made of clay is the same as the clay which is maybe a heap of clay maybe lying nearby, and if you tell a child there is no distinction between the cup which is made of the clay that we can use for drinking water, color for a pot made of clay can be used for storing water, is the same as the heap of clay which is lying about somewhere. If you say you have made something wrong with you, they would say. But in reality, Vedantin say, in fact, the pot made of clay and the pot in which you store water is in no way different from the clay. The only difference is the clay assumes a name because it assumes a form. It assumes a new form because the pot maker processes this clay and assumes a new form. And so we call it pot, that's all. So this transformation is only apparent. It is not real. So the theory that it is not real transformation, it is only an apparent transformation. In reality, the cause only appears to become clay. Sorry, the cause only appears to become effect is called Vivartavada, and the theory that the cause really becomes effect is called Parinamavada, or the theory of transformation. According to Upanishads, according to Advaita, the theory of appearance is the only legible, only logical analysis of this phenomenon. Because if things were a new creation, then we cannot explain the world as such. We may have to believe that the world is real, but the world can never be said to be real. Everything that we see around changes every minute. So there should be something which is unchanging. And that unchanging reality is clay, as in the case of pots and pans. Or thread, as in the case of clothes, from which are made from this thread. Now here, you find here, tat ejadi tan ejadi. So that which is moves, from a relative point of view, from empirical point of view, from our common sense experience point of view, there is movement. But when we realize that the reality which is supposed to be moving is all omnipresent, is present everywhere, all pervading, then where can it move? An object can move from one place to another only when it is first confined to one place and it is absent elsewhere. Then it moves, leaving behind one place, and it moves towards another place where it was not present earlier. But reality is omnipresent, it is all-pervading. So from the absolute point of view, it is not moving. That's why it is called tat nayejati. Nature means it is unmoving. There is no movement. Then this movement is only an appearance. From the relative point of view, there is movement. But when you go deeper, that movement is only appearance. Let us say, for example, when you are traveling in a train, and suppose you have got when you are sitting quiet somewhere in a seat, you are not moving from one angle, but from another angle you are moving very fast. So from the relative point of view, movement is felt. Change is real from the relative point of view. Change is real, so it is called parinama. So when we analyze closer, you find this change is only so-called change. It is only apparent change. That's why in this famous book, a well-known sloka, he says, Vivartavadasya purva bhumi. Vivartavada means the theory of appearance, the theory that the absolute reality is unmoving. It is omnipresent, all-pervasive, immanent, transcendent, etc. This is explained in the light of Vivartavada. But in its earlier stage, we may think there is transformation. Just as when a child sees pots and pans, he naturally thinks, he's not a philosopher, he thinks, well, the clay has become the pot. But then, when we analyze, when we go closer to the reality, the real state of things, we understand, before the pot maker made a pot out of clay, it was clay. And after it is broken, it will go back to the state of clay. Then how can you argue that it is something different when he's sitting in front of you in the form of a pot? The clay plus a name and a form, that is called pot, nothing else. So what we assume to be real change is later realized to be only as apparent change. So transformation is later recognized as transfiguration, which is called vivartavada. So in the absolute sense, naejadi, it is unmoving. In the relative sense, everything is moving. Tat dure, tat u antike. It is remote. Those who think this world alone is real, those who think that the present alone is reality, the empirical realities are the only realities in the world, and those who believe it's called the eternal present, every minute, if a new thing comes, it is the only thing, there is nothing beyond. For such people, this reality is remote. It is far away, because they cannot realize this. But those who have realized the supreme truth, the men for the man of wisdom, he realizes that this Atman, this reality, which someday Brahman, it is within us. It is called Brahman as the origin of the entire creation, and also as the sustenance of the whole creation, and as the point of dissolution of the whole creation. In that sense, it is called Brahman. And as the inner reality within every living being, the inner reality, the immanent reality in the entire creation, it is called Atman, the same. So, those who have realized the supreme truth, for them, it is his own reality. Tadu antike means he is very near. Tadu andarasya sarvasya. Tadu sarvasya asya bahyataha. Then he says, so tat ejadi, tat na ejadi, tat u dure, tat u antike, tad asya sarvasya antaha. Anta means that it is present within. All that you see around, when we go deeper into this inner reality, it is the Atman only, nothing else. The sarvasya asya bahyataha. It is also outside. It is the inner reality of everything. It is also what we experience outside of everything. It means it is neither inside nor outside. Anything which is all-pervading, all-pervasive, immanent and transcendent, you cannot say it is inside something or outside something. Because other than that, there is nothing else in this world. Everything else is only relative. This is the teaching of Upanishad. When we realize that we ourselves are non-distinct and non-different from that reality, then tatra ko moha kashoka ekattum anupashyataka. Then we realize ekattum means unity of existence. There is nothing other than that. This experience makes a man a better man. And according to Swami Vivekananda, as I said earlier, this is the only basis, the only logical basis for a perfect moral ideal in this world. The infinite oneness of the eternal soul is the only sanction of all morality and all ethics and all good actions, Swami Vivekananda says. This experience is the only explanation, only logical explanation, logical foundation for the very idea of all good actions, all good thoughts. This is the view of Swami Vivekananda. Now, this is in the Gita. Those who are familiar with Gita, there is a sloka. Bahirandascha bhudanam acharam charamevacha. Sukshmatva tat avikneyam. Durastam cha antiketat. Gita says, durastam, it is far away. But it is our own inner reality. For the ignorant, God is sitting somewhere far away. So let us do whatever we want here. We can pray to him once a while. Do something in his favor, and there God is satisfied. But Vedanta tells you, there is no God other than yourself in reality. Then, whenever we present this high Advaitic ideal, the question may always arise, does a man ever experience this? And if at all he experiences this, is it possible to live in this world? Sometimes students of philosophy put this question. If you experience that you are non-different from the entire creation, that you are the only reality, and that reality is within and also without, it is neither within nor without, it is all-pervading, all-pervasive, immanent, omniscient, and so on, then what is the meaning of this life? How can we live in this world? There are two explanations. One, you get in the teachings of Sri Ramakrishna in the gospel. The other, you get in traditional scriptures. So Sri Ramakrishna says, a wise man who has reached this stage of realization, he lives in this world. He may also live in this world, do his duty. He may be a doctor or engineer or a software engineer, he may be. But behind all this, he has the inner conviction that these things are not ultimately real. The inner reality is beyond all this. This realization doesn't make a man inactive, lazy, or indifferent towards his duties and responsibilities. But it helps him from being enslaved. It saves him from enslavement to his senses. That is the real experience. That's what Sri Ramakrishna says. One who has realized this truth, he doesn't get lost in this world. Even by living in this world, he can be mentally away from this world. He will be living, but he will not be part of the world. So you can live in this world without being worldly minded. That is the real advantage of this supreme realization. In the traditional scriptures, in the Shankara's commentaries and other books, says Rajnyaha Veena Vadanadi. I shall give the example. The king playing violin in his room or in his court. See, if a king invites a professional pianist or a musician, the musician will be playing his instruments, but he will be anxious whether the king is pleased. You're talking, the imagery is taken from ancient times. So kings may, in those days, used to invite great musicians to his court. And musicians will be very anxious to please the king. Because if he is not pleased, he may punish him. Ancient monarchic times, days of dictatorial monarchic system. So the musicians practically, he is very much anxious. He is not free. But suppose the king himself plays, he is not supposed to need anybody's favor. He is not in need of appeasement. So he will be free. Similarly, the one who has realized the supreme truth can live in this world, and every moment he can enjoy that he is the eternal free reality. He can enjoy freedom. He can live in this world without being swept off his feet by worldliness. He can live, but he can be free from world. One can travel in a boat, but if the boat gets filled with water, it capsizes. But if the boat lives on the water, then it can take you across the river. Otherwise, water enters the boat will capsize. So if worldliness enters our life, we are lost. But we can live in this world without being worldly minded. That is the real advantage of the supreme wisdom. That's what Sri Ramakrishna says. This realization of one's unity with the ultimate reality. This experience of Jiva Brahmaikya, as it is called in Vedantic terminology. Last time I said we have a few minutes. If you have got any doubt on what I have discussed today or any of these days, and if you need any clarification, I shall try my best to reply to those questions, explain those points, any of you. Otherwise, if you don't have any questions, I shall continue. Oh yes, in fact, Purusha, the Atman only, same. In that particular hymn, in Rigveda Samhita, the word Purusha used in this sense. So you find in the Vedic literature, different terms are used in different contexts, meaning the same. The word Purusha is explained in this manner. The reality, the indweller in every living being in this world, inner essence of everything. That's Purusha. That is Atman. From the cosmic point of view, it is Brahman. From the individual point of view, it is Atman or Purusha. I hope no more questions. Any mantra or any idea which I've explained, that will help me to understand in what way I can explain it more effectively. From your questions, I can get an idea of to what extent I'm able to connect with you. That's why. we have a few minutes, then I shall go to the very next mantra. And that is very important. That is 8th one. Saparyaga shukram akayam avranam asnaviram shuddham apapaviddham kavihi manishi paribhu swayambhuhu yadha tathyadorthan vedadha shashvadibhis samapheha. This is the 8th mantra. Again, the continuation is a continuation of the ideal of Atman, description of Atman. One point just to be remembered, as I said in the beginning, Upanishads use terms to explain the reality with ultimate idea of concluding that the reality cannot be explained in words. All these terms are used. And when you closely study the meaning of these terms, you naturally come to the conclusion, this reality is beyond words. That is the scheme in this text. So, Saha Paryagad. Saha means that Atman, that reality. Paryagad means it is pervading, all-pervading in all directions. Shukram means it is radiant. It is ever effulgent. Akayam. Akayam actually means that which has no body. Means niravayava. Means that which has no parts. Anything which has parts has to perish. You can. Anything which is made of many components. Anything which is the result of assembling different parts will perish. And this Atman doesn't have any parts. It doesn't have a body. So avranam, without any scar, means it cannot be injured, it cannot be hurt. Anything which has a body will undergo change and transformation. Ultimately, it will vanish. As I said in the beginning of this class, anything which is relative should be subject to change in the past, present and future. It should come into existence sometime in the past, should stay for some time, grow, evolve, and slowly it will start decaying and ultimately it will vanish. So, jayade asti vardhade viparinamade kshiyade nasyade. It's called shadvikara, six changes. Six types of changes. Here, birth means coming to existence, which actually means when a child is born or something is born, what we mean is it has come into the purview of our perception. That's what Vedantin say. The child was there in his previous life. Then that body perished. Now that Jivatman, individual soul, has taken another body. So, and it has become a visible reality in front of you, a new child is born. And if something is born in the past, then it should exist for some time. And it should, and that's called jayade asti. Viparinamade means it should evolve from babyhood to childhood and boyhood, youth, old age, and then ultimately vanishes. So that, then it slowly decays and gets destroyed. So anything which is composed of parts, which is made of parts, will have to be subject to any one or all of the six changes. So this Atman is beyond all this, because it never comes into existence. Because there was never a time when this Atman did not exist. So it cannot be born. Sometimes this is misunderstood. Ajam it is called. Unborn. Unborn doesn't mean that it never exists. It means there was never a time when Atman did not exist. So naturally it cannot emerge. So that's it. So it is That's what it's called. It is akayam, avranam, asnaviram. It has no nerves, muscles, and so on. That's of quick continuous. Shuddham. Shuddha means pure. That which is untouched by changes. All kinds of impurities are in the form of changes. It is beyond all this. Apapa vidham. It is not affected by either sin, the ideal of sin, or the ideal of virtue. This again, it may lead to some possible misunderstandings. Very often, you know, there is a criticism that Advaita doesn't care for moral values. Because, in fact, the reality is, Advaita is the only logical basis for real morality. As I said last time, the idea of punya and papa is related to the empirical, is related to the idea that God creates this world, supervises this world, and regulates and controls human actions. Advaita doesn't deny it, but it says that when you go beyond this, you understand a higher picture of the reality. Then you find the so-called God is not one who creates this world. Rather, it is the God which is the reality, which is permanently present in every living being. And one who has realized the supreme truth, he cannot commit any sin. And if there is no concept of sin at all, then there is no need of a concept of virtue. It goes beyond dharma and adharma. Goes beyond virtue and vice. This is the idea behind. It is called apapa vidham. Kavihi. Kavi means krandadarshi, the one who can see beyond everything. The one who can see into things and also who can see beyond things. This is called, these two characteristics called kavi. Kavi is a term used very often to mean rishi. Rishi is one who can see into the reality of things. And when he sees into reality of things, he gets a transcendental vision of the reality of things. As Rishayeha, Kavayeha, Mantra Dashtayeha, all these terms are used in Vedantic terminology. Kavi means Krantadarshi, one who can, the farsightedness and a vision into the inner reality. If you combine both, this is called Kavi. I can call somebody the witness of everything, the one who sees everything. Manishi means all knowing, omniscient. Paribhu means that which is beyond everything, which transcends everything. Soyambhu means that which is self existent. As I said earlier, you know, if you say that tree was already present, the seed, then you can't say that tree is a new creation. You may ask the question, then what about seed? Seed also comes out of a tree. So ultimately, it is the same reality. From one angle, you call it tree. From another angle, you call it seed. From the effect standpoint, you call it tree. From the causal standpoint, you call it tree. That's all. But Atman is beyond all this. Atman is the reality which is self-existent and it is not created by anybody. Soyambhu. Sa means Atman. Shashudi bhyaka. Samabhyaka. Arthan. Yata tathyataka. Vyatathat. It needs a little explanation. It is the reality, this Atman, which actually controls and regulates and makes it possible for the whole creation to sustain and exist in the form of different living beings, including the human world and also the animal kingdom. Everything in this world, trees, mountains, human beings, animals, all these phenomena exist because they're controlled and regulated by this absolute reality. That's why if you look at the world from one point of view, you may say it's all chaos, uncertainty principle. But from another point of view, you can say behind this chaos, there is a regulating principle. Behind this madness, there is an order. Behind this uncertainty, there is an invisible regulating principle. And it is this Atman. Very often in the Vedic terminology, it is called Rutam. In the Vedic terminology, three terms are sometimes used. Rutam, Satyam, and Dharma. These three terms are used in the Vedic and Upanishadic terminology. Rutam is that invisible, inexplicable, but clearly felt regulating principle behind the entire creation. You can see an order, a cause and effect relationship behind it, in everything belonging to the relative phenomena. And behind this, there is an intelligence, supreme intelligence, the regulating principle. It is called Ritam. Satyam is the philosophical aspect of that Ritam. See, when a man violates the ethical principles, and if he cuts down trees, if there is deforestation, there will be no rains, there will be famine. So you can see, whenever we try to violate this rhythm called rhyme, rhythm in English word also comes very close to that. A harmony, a mutual relationship, an idea of sequence behind the cosmic phenomena. When we violate it, the whole balance is lost. Because we violate it, we go against Satyam, the eternal truth. And Dharma is nothing but the application of this principle of regulating principle and truth in our daily life. Dharma, righteousness. So when a man when his life is established on Dharma, then his life is established on Satyam, the eternal truth, and then it is in perfect harmony with the ideal of rhythm, that in the invisible regulating principle behind entire cosmic phenomena, which Vedic rishis call rhythm. In the Vedic literature, very often you find some Vedic mantras which apparently distinguish rhythm and satyam. Rutena satyena, where in such mantra, rhythm cha satyam cha. Sometimes one is used as the adjective, the other. Sometimes they are used independently to mean different things. But in the commentaries, in the higher analysis, you find Rutam, Satyam, and Dharma. They are three dimensions of the same supreme truth. So that supreme truth is, it is all-pervasive, all-pervading. It is partless, means it is not limited by parts. Human body is made of different parts, means it's limited. And therefore, it can get hurt. But this Atman is Avranam. It cannot be hurt. And it is beyond the concept of, in Sanskrit called Papa and Punya, means vice and sin and virtue. Which means when one is established in virtue, there is no need for him to distinguish sin from virtue. When you are establishing dharma, you need not worry about adharma because you are already established. When you are establishing truth, then you don't have to be always on your guard, alert to tell the truth only, because you naturally tell the truth. On the other hand, there are people who even they deliberately they work hard and think, well, I am going to tell you truth, they will tell a lie also. So, it becomes a human nature. When one is established, naturally established in the ideal of truth, then there is no need for him to distinguish truth from falsehood, because for him truth only exists. So this ultimate reality is explained here using a language and a style which is archaic, but when explained in philosophical terms, becomes very simple, because Atman is the nearest to us and it is the simplest, the only reality. So those who really understand it so clearly. Those who cannot understand it, it is tad dure. For others, it is tad antik, it is very near them. I think I have already exceeded the limited time. No, there were no questions, hopefully. If you don't want questions, I shall continue in the next class. I shall continue till about 8:40. Thank you. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Tat Sat. Shri Ram Vishnu Arpanamastu.